Meta Practice V1, Chapter 9. Working with Difficult People and Difficult States. Chapter 9. Working with Difficult People and Difficult States. Two situations test this practice harder than anything else: difficult people and difficult internal states. This chapter addresses both directly. Difficult people. Difficult people are not, in fact, the enemy of metta practice. They are the engine of it. Every meaningful gain in long-term metta capacity is built on the back of work done with people who would, on the surface, seem to deserve none of your care. They are also the first place the practice starts to feel real instead of theoretical, because difficulty is where every other lens cracks. Here are the moves I have found most useful, distilled from a lot of mistakes. See difficulty as ignorance, not evil. A simple but radical reframe from the older traditions: people who act terribly are doing so out of ignorance, not malice that is somehow ontologically separate from ignorance. If they had access, really had access, to the perspective of others, to the full picture of what their actions cost, to the long-term consequences for themselves, they would not do what they're doing. People who lash out are usually in pain. People who manipulate are usually scared. People who hoard or dominate are usually carrying a wound they have not faced. None of this excuses them. It just means they are operating from the same kind of confusion that babies operate from when they cry because they can't have candy. A baby's confusion is forgivable because we know they don't understand. Difficult adults are people whose understanding has not, in some specific way, kept up with their power. That is sad. It is also workable. Lovable, even, in the sense that metta is the right response to it. Recognize that ill will and metta cannot occupy the same mind. This is one of the most useful empirical observations in the whole tradition. You cannot generate metta toward someone while simultaneously holding ill will toward them. The two states are mutually exclusive. So when you find yourself filled with hostility toward a difficult person, you have a choice: stay in the hostility or generate metta. You cannot do both. This matters because holding on to ill will is always painful for you, regardless of whether the other person deserves it. Even in the most justifiable cases, even when someone has genuinely wronged you, your ill will hurts you more than it hurts them. It is not a useful weapon. There is no time when ill will helps you. Even if you are protecting your family from a rabid bear, hating the bear does not help. You never see an Olympic archer filled with rage before taking a shot. Clear-headedness is what wins fights, saves lives, and protects what you love. Don't try to start with the worst person you know. Buddhaghosa's instructions are explicit about this. Working metta toward the most difficult person in your life is the last step, not the first. Start with someone moderately difficult, someone who annoys you but who you don't actively hate. Build your capacity gradually. Working all the way up to the people who have hurt you most can be a process of years. That is fine. You do not have to forgive everyone all at once. You may also choose not to forgive some people at all. In the conventional sense, the practice does not require you to grant absolution. It only requires you to release the ill will, which is its own thing. Distinguish metta from approval, again. Loving someone does not mean you approve of what they're doing. It does not mean you have to be in their life. It does not mean you have to forgive them or trust them or work with them. You can wish someone well from across a continent, with no contact, with full clarity that you are never going to see them again. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. May you be safe. May you be at peace. That is enough. Use difficulty as a barometer. The clearest sign your metta practice is taking root is that difficult people start to bother you less. Not that they become non-difficult. Not that you stop having boundaries, but the sting fades. The internal grievance loop runs less often. Your tone with them softens. Your reactions get smaller. This is one of the most reliable measures of progress in the entire practice. More on this in Chapter 13. Difficult internal states. The other common situation is when you are not dealing with another person but with your own difficult states: anger, anxiety, grief, exhaustion, depression. These deserve different treatment. Anger. Anger that arises during ordinary practice usually responds to a quick reset. Notice it, recall that it cannot coexist with metta, generate metta, watch the anger soften. Anger that doesn't respond, the deeper, structural anger that belongs to a real situation, needs to be honored. Acknowledge what you're feeling. Don't gaslight yourself. Then ask, what does the situation need from me, with this information, that does not require me to act from rage? Sometimes the answer is a conversation. Sometimes it is a boundary. Sometimes it is leaving the room. Anger is information about a real condition. It is not a license for what to do next. Anxiety. Acute anxiety often makes metta hard to feel. The feeling tone of anxiety is too noisy. The body is too activated. In these cases, equanimity practices, calm breathing, body scan, simple counting often work better than trying to force loving kindness on top of a panicked nervous system. Use those practices to settle the body first. Then come back to metta. Treat the equanimity work as preparation for metta, not a replacement for it. We address this more fully in Chapter 11. Grief. Grief is in some ways the easiest difficult state to bring into metta practice, because grief is itself a form of love, love for what is gone or going. Don't try to override grief with cheerful loving kindness. That doesn't work and is a kind of falseness. Instead, let the practice include the grief. May the one I have lost be at peace. May I be at peace. May all who grieve be at peace. The practice can hold sadness. It cannot pretend sadness isn't there. Exhaustion. The Karaniya Metta Sutta explicitly says metta should be practiced when not too tired. Exhausted practice tends to be sloppy and discouraging. If you are wiped, the most loving thing you can do is rest. Sleep. Eat. Hydrate. The practice will be there when you are ready for it. Depression. Depression is its own subject and is treated more fully in the next chapter. The short version, metta is one of the most useful practices for depression I know, but it sometimes takes longer to bear fruit and is best practiced alongside, not instead of, appropriate professional care. If you are in a serious depressive episode, please get qualified help. The practice supports clinical treatment, it should not substitute for it. When the practice itself feels empty. Sometimes you sit down to practice and nothing happens. The feeling won't come. The phrases sound hollow. The whole exercise feels rote. This is normal. Even very experienced practitioners hit periods like this. A few responses. Don't force it. Metta cannot be willed into existence by gritting your teeth. Trying harder usually makes it worse. Change the anchor. If your usual anchor isn't working, try a different one. Switch from yourself to your dog, or from your benefactor to a child, or from any specific being to the felt sense of all the kind acts you've ever received in your life. Reflect on benefits. Spend a few minutes contemplating what metta has actually given you and the people around you. The Buddhist tradition specifically recommends this when motivation flags. Spend time with the kind. Be near people, animals, or situations that already produce metta in you naturally. A walk in a park where there are dogs and children. A visit with a kind friend. A movie about someone whose love impressed you. Lower the bar. If the full meditation isn't working, just generate one tiny moment of warmth toward yourself. May I be at peace. That counts. Strings of those moments, even tiny ones, eventually rebuild the habit. The practice has good days and bad days, like anything else worth doing. The long-run trajectory is what matters. Stay with it. Skip days when you need to. Resume when you can. The practice is robust.